Hello and welcome to the Cyber Sisters podcast. We're your Cyber Sisters, Allison and Emily, two cyber educators talking about edtech pedagogy and this week, copyright in the classroom. Melissa Ampero spent 19 years teaching 11th and 12th grade ELA and just recently moved to the Lincoln Intermediate Unit as a staff developer, now creating and facilitating professional development in the central PA region. You can find her on Twitter at Mel Ampero or at her website, melissaannpero.com. We are so excited to have her on the show. We have met her many, many times at the different conferences and places that we attend and have truly enjoyed her work. And we're going to be talking about something that I think is just one of the most important things for the 21st century classroom. So Melissa, thank you so much for being on the show. We're so excited to have you here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking me to be here. I'm excited to be a part of this.
So Melissa, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey as an educator? This is one of the questions that we've really enjoyed asking guests, especially those who have been in the classroom for so long. It really is sort of a twisty-turny journey that brings most people into this profession.
Sure. I have always wanted to be a teacher. My mother used to tell me stories about how I used to set all my dolls and my baby brother up, and like they were my classroom and I would teach them. And later in life, my brother did say to me, he's like, you know, you taught me how to read, right?
Uh-huh.
So I've always wanted to do this. And I love reading. So becoming an English teacher was just what I wanted to do. I was like, I can teach kids to love books and to love writing. And that really started my journey. I did get hired right out of college to teach middle school, and I did that for a couple of years, but I wasn't happy. It was weird. It wasn't really where I wanted to be. It wasn't the students. It wasn't the district. I was just not happy. And so I actually left the classroom and went to get my master's degree, took a year off. And in that year, I missed teaching something fierce. Like I missed the schedules and I missed the kids and I missed the planning. And so after a year of graduate work, I was about 6 credits short of my master's. I got hired at a high school for 11th and 12th grade, and that's where I stayed for 19 years. That journey led me through what the beginnings of ed tech looked like. I was the first person to grab the smart board. We had a smart board in the building, and I was like, oh, I'll play with that. I remember bringing in, I used to show clips of Hamlet to my students, and I had a laser disc to use because it was much easier to find the clips than fast forwarding through a VHS.
Oh yeah.
So I've been I couldn't believe our building had a laser disc player, but they did. So I was like, okay. So I've, you know, just kind of been playing with ed tech as it's come around. I've always been kind of a computer geek, so I like it. But what brought me then to this copyright stuff was seeing so much stuff online that other people owned and people weren't getting credit, or using things and going, wait a minute, a company has that, you know, starting to pay attention. It was probably, I'm going to say 2015 or 16 when I really started to pay a lot of attention to what I was using in my classroom, what was going out on social media from my classroom. And I don't know, I just started to really kind of dive into it. And then when I decided to kind of pitch this copyright presentation for a year at P&C, that was really interesting because that brought me down a giant rabbit hole that I have still yet to get out of.
Well, and it's so interesting because I think this is an area where I did feel a little underserved in my teaching education. I can think of maybe talking about copyright and copyright in the classroom and sharing of materials and really didn't, you know, get a really formal education on what these things are that are so important. Emily, in your education teaching-wise, did you talk a lot about copyright?
I don't remember talking about it at all.
I'm going to tell you that I never spoke about it. We talked about, as English teachers, making sure students used citations in papers.
Yes.
And yes. That was it.
Which I think leads me into my next question, which is, why is classroom so important and why should teachers care about it?
Well, that's a really great question, Emily, because way back when I started teaching, my classroom wasn't public. What happened in those four walls with that door shut is just what happened. But now our classrooms, we're encouraged as teachers to make those things public, to put things out on Twitter and to make websites and to show people what's happening inside. And once we started to do that, we needed to really start to pay more attention to what we were doing in our classrooms, not only for legal reasons, but to model for students what the right things to do were. Because there's a huge difference between what teachers can use under the educational umbrella of copyright and what everyone else uses outside of the educational umbrella. And yes. So, you know, I really wanted to push my students to, look, most of you are not going to go into education, so let me teach you how to do this where you won't have that umbrella of protection that educators can have.
I think you make such a good point that classroom teaching is so different because of the public nature of it. And I do think for the most part, that's a benefit, right? I think that one of the things that I've often said to people is that many people have an opinion on education because they've had an education. But many of those opinions are formed by what was happening when they were in school, which depending on the age of the person can be, you know, 10 years, 20 years ago. And it's oftentimes very different than what is actually happening in classrooms now. And I think the ability to have real conversations about how dynamic and interesting and different they are than maybe they were in the past and how much they've changed and evolved is a positive thing. But it also does create a lot more discourse and a lot more opportunity for potential criticism and, as you mentioned, legal action. For Emily and I, we teach in virtual schools, right? So our classroom literally is in another person's home, right? And so we often have situations where we'll have parents listening in the background, or brothers or sisters or aunts or uncles. You know, we even sometimes have students that are taking class if they, you know, maybe have a power outage or something from a public space, like a public library. So classrooms and classroom spaces are so different and so much more open. And ultimately, it's a positive thing, but it does mean that we have to be a little bit more careful about crossing our T's and dotting our I's.
Yes, absolutely.
And I was sitting here thinking too, Allison, that when we were getting set up for the podcast too, like, and I know we're focusing on classroom copyright, but when we were getting set up for the podcast and we were trying to figure out what music we were going to use even, and yep. Once we decided that you weren't going to write it, which is totally in your wheelhouse and definitely could have been possible, we just didn't have the time, that when we were trying to figure out what music we were going to use, trying to figure out what we could use legally, and then we ended up reaching out to our composer to use it. So we are clear. We are good on copyright. If you look at any of our show notes, we have him cited at the bottom, so we're good. But even just that process of trying to find music that we could use after you decided to not write it for us.
And it was easier than we expected to, right? Like, one of the nice things I think about learning about you know, sort of a lot of these different things is that there are amazing resources. There are artists and composers and all sorts of people who want you to use their product, right? And it might be better than what I could have composed on, you know, any of my little instruments here, right? You can have access to really wonderful things if you go through those right steps. So I really applaud you, Melissa, for that point you made too about modeling for your students. You know, you're not going to be inside of this, you know, educational umbrella. And so by me showing you and modeling for you those good steps, you're going to have the opportunity to learn about how to do these things. Because once again, it's not something that's talked about in the classroom. We talk a lot about citing our sources and sort of academic research and APA or MLA, whichever one. But realistically, for most of our students, that's not the kind of citing of sources or the kind of work that they're going to do on a daily basis. So I'm really interested in, because I think I was one of the biggest offenders sort of before learning more about this. I had many, many misconceptions about classroom copyright and sort of what the different rules were. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you hear talking with people about this subject on a regular basis?
I think that the biggest misconception that I hear regularly is, well, I'm a teacher, so I can use all of it, right? And that's, it's funny because there are educational guidelines that we can and cannot use. You know, things like, what is fair use? Oh, well, it's all fair use. I'm a teacher. No, no, it's not. You know, there's copyright has a time frame on it, and things like that. So when we talk, when I talk to students in my classroom about copyright, I really wanted to explain that copyright has to do with a whole bunch of things. It has to do with ideas, words, digital images and pictures, sound, and the biggest one, self-plagiarism.
Ooh.
Yeah. So when we're talking about ideas, you know, you can't steal somebody else's idea. And for example, if you grab something off of, I'll give you an example of something I was doing today. I was creating sheets to print out Ozobot codes. So I was working with Ozobots yesterday. That stuff's free out there. Ozobot puts their stuff out. It's, if you have an Ozobot, that's how you code it. But there are some people who would take that information and then attempt to sell it.
Which is just very shady.
Right.
Very, very shady.
But it's not, a lot of times it's not monitored. Like I can just put it out there on a website and be like, hey, you can buy this from me, pay me $5 for the work I did to sell you something that's free.
Right. Right.
And that becomes sketchy. Words can become, you know, copyrighted. There are quotes out there that people have, you know, said that they get, you know, you need to give people credit for. And that's that MLA like citation thing. But what happens, I think, in classrooms is that we use pictures and videos and GIFs and music all the time under the umbrella of our educational field. And kids think then they can go do that wherever they want.
Yes.
And that's actually an issue. And I brought it up in my classroom a lot. My students were very much aware that if they were going to use something, it had to fall under parody. It had to have some sort of change to it so that it wasn't exactly what it was, that we gave credit where the information originally came from. I had students regularly do parodies, rewrite, you know, songs to fit, let's say, the plot of Hamlet, and that falls under parody, and that's okay, because the artists are like, look, you use my music for this educational thing, and it puts our stuff out there. But in the videos that they made, it said, you know, original music by, you know, transformation done for this purpose.
And what a great way for them to remember that lesson, right? Than to actually do it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all, you know, please do it with me because that was important. I had students create podcasts and they wanted music. And so I sent them to a couple of free sites, which we're actually going to talk about later. They're in my resources of music you can use that's out there for free on purpose set there so that people can do things like this. The biggest one for me though is self-plagiarism. If you publish something under your own name and then you use that again in a different fashion, you actually have to legally cite yourself. And what's happening at colleges right now is that, let's say you had a class and you could pull that paper off for two different courses, that's actually shady. That's considered self-plagiarism. If you wrote a paper on one thing and then you want to use that information in another paper, you actually have to cite your paper. It's kind of crazy.
I've actually seen that happen at my college institution. We had two classes that were, they used similar texts. They were not about the same topic, but I remember talking to a classmate and him telling me, oh, I was actually in this other class last year, so I'm going to take a few paragraphs that I already wrote from this paper and just apply it to this paper to make that go faster for me. And I completely understand the logic of it was my own work. I did it. I'm not, you know, really trying to transfer, but it was for a different purpose. It was for a different use, right? It still is sort of cheating in a way. And so that I've absolutely seen that kind of thing happen. And I do think it is something where a student could easily get tripped up and an adult could get easily tripped up.
Yeah. And you sign lots of very small words when you decide to go to college.
Yes.
Like nobody reads the fine print that says things like, if you cheat, they'll kick you out. So when you get to things like that, that's where kids get really tripped up. And I think one of the other things that we don't understand is what fair use is. Fair use, according to the Copyright Act, has to do with purpose, nature, amount and substance, and effect. So the purpose of what you're using is a big deal. So if it's going to be transformed like a parody, if it's going to be used for nonprofit, or if it's going to be educational, that falls under fair use. The nature of what you're using is also really important. If the piece is published, it's probably not fair use. You probably have to have some sort of permission to use it. If it's out of print, you're good. That's fair use. If nobody makes it anymore, that falls under fair use. But if it's creative, you probably need permission to borrow from it, to use it. If it's factual, if you notice any government website actually does not have any person's name attached to articles, and that is because anyone who works for the government, when they post things on the governmental websites, the author is the government. The author
is not the person.
Yeah. It was an interesting thing that I found, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And that becomes factual and that becomes fair use. So you pay attention to if it's a .gov site versus a .com site.
Well, and there also might be a difference between using, for example, images, I think is probably one of the biggest ones, right? Mm-hmm. I'm using this image in an educational fashion to, talk about what's in this image. Maybe it's a historical context, versus I'm using this to make my slide look pretty, right? Decoration sort of, versus, that kind of specific educational context, I imagine would make a difference as well.
Yeah, you talk about images, and actually somebody recently sent me an article that and a museum was actually, this is going to sound ridiculous, but a museum was suing Pornhub. Pornhub pulled an image of, it was a Renaissance painting, which is clearly fair use, the Renaissance
right.
painting. And then did some manipulation to it and was using it on their site. But the museum that posted the picture said, yes. You can't use that because the painting itself is fair use, but the photograph taken by the library or by the museum, I'm sorry, that photograph is copyrighted to the museum.
I remember distinctly learning about an artist in college who literally what she did is she went around and she took pictures of other people's photographs. And then the sort of purpose behind that was, we're going to put a female's name on this, picture and think about what does this image represent from a female point of view. And I thought that was such a fascinating concept. But you're right. I think we sometimes think about, those sorts of images as being, just images of something else, right? You have to think about who is the photographer? How is it that you're getting access to this ancient statue or, the Great Wall of China or all of these different things? Was there a photographer who made that possible? And that's, I think, a wonderful thing to point out both to students and to teachers, because once again, how we use that image can be very, very different depending on what we're teaching and how we're teaching and how much of it we're including.
I also, when we're talking about fair use, we need to talk about amount of what you're using and the substance of it. For example, the percentage of usage.
Yes.
There are rules about how much of something you can use. When it comes to audio or video, it's a very short amount of time. If it's a percentage of a text, there are rules about how much of the text you can use. And what parts of it you're using, like, if you're using something that is very easily recognizable to a group of people, does that fall under fair use? And then the final part of actually that is the effect of it. Like, who's your appeal? Who's your audience? Years ago, Weird Al Yankovic is one of my favorite artists. He's hysterical. and that's where I got the idea for my kids to do parodies. But he did a parody of Gangsta's Paradise called Amish Paradise. And there was a whole lawsuit about whether or not he was allowed to use that information. But one of his arguments was that his audience was different, right? The people who listen to Weird Al Yankovic are not the same people who regularly listen to, gangster rap. So
right.
The appeal in the audience was different. So does that fall under fair use? And I'm going to go out on a limb and say, and I do not know this for sure, that I'm sure that Weird Al Yankovic gets permission from everyone he uses. Because that would ruin his career if he didn't. But the argument becomes audience. Who do you want to see it? I had students rewrite a Plain White Tees song for Hamlet. That audience was me in my classroom. That audience isn't the world. So I could have that conversation about it was the piece was transformed and the audience and appeal was different.
But also, especially as we're encouraging more often our students to have a wider audience, right? I know many, many teachers who I think with good faith, right, are, maybe have a class website where they would post students performing these things or encourage students to post it to YouTube or something like that, right? It, a very, very different audience if it's being shared in among amongst your classroom, even then on a classroom website, as opposed to, you know, TikTok or YouTube or one of these other, you know, major social media platforms.
Sure.
I am totally with you on the Weird Al stuff. And I'm sure he must get permission too. But yeah, and that's one of the things we want to do too, is like encourage the wider audience appeal. As we think about those ISTE standards and the global collaboration and sharing with others, we definitely want to make sure that they're being good digital citizens and not. And I know I've even shared with you, Melissa, that one billboard that I took a picture of, and I was like, Melissa, what do you think about this in copyright?
Yeah, it's funny because I do see, you know, we look around us and we see it all the time. And you're like, oh, that's sketchy. I've had actually students go around and I'm like, find me the things you think are copyright infringement, you know, just as a, you know, scavenger hunt kind of thing. Kids will be amazed at what they find.
It's one of those things that, like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Uh-huh. Once you start looking for it.
Well, people know I do this now, so I get emails all the time. And everyone I work with is like, hey, can I use this? Can I use this? I'm like, you know, it's educational. We can cite it. Or, you know, that one actually says needs permission. So please, please ask the author if you can use it. Tell them exactly what you want to do with it and if you can use it or not. I did it in my classroom. I made a card, a get out of jail free card for kids to not have to hand in a homework assignment, but I wanted to make it look like the Monopoly card. I actually wrote to Hasbro or Mattel, if I forget which company. But I wrote to the company and I was like, hey, I'm a teacher. This is what I want to do. I want to use this. May I? And within hours, they sent me an email back that was like, yeah, sure. Here's a letter giving you permission.
We had a very similar thing happen in our English class last year. My co-teacher has a favorite poet and she knew of a poem that she thought was perfect to teach a certain standard and said, I really want to use this poem. And I said, okay, I love this poem too, but we need to get the poet's permission. And it's only like next week that we're teaching it. So I don't know if we're going to do that in time. She messaged her and the poet got back to her, I think within like 24 hours with, you know, of course this is great. And same thing, like a little write-up that just sort of gave us permission to do that work. So it's very possible and feasible. Like it's not scary to reach out to some of these people or companies. You can have the resources that you want. You just sort of have to go through it through the proper channels.
Right. And they want you to really use it. One of the things I do see a lot is that when teachers want to give kids access to texts, like novels, like, oh, well, I found the PDF online. And look, somebody typed that out and stuck it online, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the author gave permission or the publication company gave permission for that to be out there. And one of the things I talk with adults and students about a lot is that those publications, people make money off that. That's their living. So you don't really want to not allow them their payment for their work. And that's a huge part of this, is that people should get paid for their work.
And I think especially in an age where many of our students are growing up, because I still remember like iTunes. Like I think we definitely have some listeners who I think are young enough that they're going to be like, you had to pay per song back in the day, right? Because now it's all services, right? It's a mm-hmm. streaming service for your television, for your music, for games, for all of these different things. You pay for access and not necessarily for the product itself. And so I think it's even easier for younger generations to sort of miss that back end transaction.
Allison, I've got a better one for you.
Ooh, lay it on.
I used Napster and LimeWire.
I was sitting here thinking of Napster and I was like, I don't know if I do remember Napster.
Now, in the old days, I would actually hit record on the tape deck when the radio was playing to get the songs that I wanted. But that was work. LimeWire was just click download.
Well, I remember doing that too, but then that's not copyright, right? That kind of defeats the purpose of this whole conversation.
Right. And I mean, I did it as you know, as a younger person and
right.
I was like, wow, I didn't pay for those. And that was right before iTunes was like, well, let's do this legally, right? Apple was like, let's jump on this bandwagon and do this legally. And it makes a difference. When I switch phones, I just got a new phone and there's a bunch of music in my system that was downloaded off of my son's Apple account. And it's not on my phone because his account's not loaded on my phone. Well, I can't hear it.
And I think it helps teach that lesson, right? That the arts are work and to value those things that creators are making and putting out there into the world, right? It's more than just appreciation for whatever thing. It really is about someone's livelihood and the real labor that goes into creating all of this stuff that we enjoy.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this a little bit, but do you have any more tips that you can give to teachers about copyright in the classroom and making sure that we are doing all of this legally and safely?
So when we're in the classroom, we're under that, you know, educational umbrella, but we do need to talk to kids about not only that MLA and APA stuff, but to actually give the credit when they're speaking or writing, to use signal phrases to say, you know, according to so-and-so, you know, the columnist for whatever article this is, to make that vocal, to give credits pages. When you make slide decks, there should be a page at the end that gives credit, like a works cited page of all of the things that you talked about and the sources that you use. In addition, I really stress, and I started to do this in a lot of my presentations, was to embed the permissions into my citations, into my slide decks. I'll give you an example. I had my pictures professionally taken for headshots. I started to do, when I started to talk at PTNC and I started to make a website, I really wanted some like professionally done photos of myself just to make it look a little more on the up and up. I actually paid the photographer for the digital rights to use that those images online and in my presentations. With that permission came the caveat that I would make sure it said photos used with permission by and the name of the photography company. And then I hotlink them whenever I can. It's free advertisement for her and her company, which is fine because the photos are fantastic. But it also, you know, it models that I'm using these images with permission.
I know that's something I always do that always blows the kids' minds every time I show them, is to show them how to search for images using the Creative Commons licenses and just changing like that tools. It's a simple setting. And just showing them how to search for images that way is like, it's a 2 second difference. And they're like, oh, you can change that? I'm like, yeah, super easy to do.
Yeah.
Well, and especially on creative projects, the students really want their stuff to look good, right? And there are definitely sites that you can go to where you're going to get images that are sort of, you know, fair use or free to use or, you know, all of that stuff that aren't necessarily like the best and like most highest quality. Like, and I feel like I always get asked from students, you know, I don't want that picture on my poster. You know, that one doesn't look cool. Why can't I just, you know, Google, or I found this one of this band, you know, that I really like or something like that. And I think it's a great opportunity inside of creative projects to really take them through that process and to find those things. So sort of to that point, Melissa, do you have any resources that you use or that you think are really, really good for helping teachers, students, anyone who's trying to really do this on the up and up and wants to make sure that the materials that they're using are, you know, passable to use for students? What are your recommendations?
My first recommendation is, if you really want it and you can make it yourself, make it yourself, right? I was looking, for example, the other day for some images for a fist to five visual. The idea that you put up a fist or one finger, two, three, four, or five to see how comfortable you are with something, kind of like a Likert scale. And I was finding all of these things and they were like subject to copyright, might be subject to copyright. So I just took a picture of my hand in six different motions. And that's now my image of a fist and a one, two, three, four, five. There you go.
Very clever.
You know, and it didn't take long, but those are now mine. Now I don't have to worry about it. And a bunch of people, when they saw the slide deck, were like, oh, where'd you get those? You know, that's the cutest little kid's hand. And I was like, that's my hand.
Oh.
Thanks, guys. it's just the angle that I took it at. But you know, that's do it, your, make it yourself. And don't copy somebody else's, but create something on your own. But there are a great ton of free and fair use tools out there. The first one Emily already talked about was changing your Google search to look for usage rights, right? But if you want some really good images, Pexels and Unsplash and Pixabay are great places to go to look for things that have free and fair use. They will be listed as free or fair use. And you can also give those people credit. You don't, some of them say no attribution needed. Even if it says that, I always encourage adults and students, teachers and students, to give attribution. Like, if it was yours, wouldn't you want somebody to know it was yours?
Right. It's a great way at the very least to show appreciation.
Yeah. You know, really thank you. And just, and hot link it. It's so easy to do. For video, there is Filmstro and VidEvo actually have some free videos that you can use. The music ones, Incompetech is the website that has tons of free music. It's all, a lot of it's very synthesizer sounding. Kind of brings me back to my late 80s vibe. But again, it's got free sounds, music, and it's long. Some of them are 3, 4, 5 minutes of music.
That's nice.
Yeah. And so it's really nice. And then when you're talking about using video in the classroom, school districts really should look into things like the Motion Picture License Corps or SWANC.
Tell us about those.
So the Motion Picture License Corps and SWANC are subscriptions that allow you to use videos in your classroom. For example, when I was a student council advisor, we wanted to do a movie night. And so the kids were picking all these movies and I was like, we don't have the rights to show this to a group of people and charge them for it.
Right.
That's
the biggest thing, right? When you're doing, it's the fact that it's ticketed, right? Is
that's
sort of
a
big deal there.
You know, yeah. I mean, when you watch any of those videos, like when you pull up a DVD, the first thing you see is this is for home use only. So yeah. The minute you're not using it for home, it's kind of a big deal. And so we actually showed Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer because that particular film actually is free, is fair use. When it was made, a couple of them, Frosty the Snowman, I think is one of them too.
Those little claymation.
Yeah, the stop
ones.
Motion.
Yeah,
ones.
Right? Like stop motion. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, they're actually free for use. But on the other hand, I wanted to make a t-shirt for our Powderpuff Girls that was the picture of Lucy holding the football and, you know, Charlie Brown missing it. And I was like, that's copyrighted. And I wrote to the Schwartz family. There's ways to get in touch with them. And they were like, nope.
There you go.
Okay. Hey, kids, can't use that. Even if I draw it myself, but you didn't draw it yourself, you're copying.
Right.
So when I do say make it yourself, it has to be yours.
Yes, it can't just be like a trace or something.
Yeah. But schools can actually do that. They can actually get rights. And here's one of the things that I do tell teachers that is a big surprise. So if you in your classroom by yourself decide you want to pull a PDF of a book that's still in print, let's say The Giver, and you find it online and you use that in your classroom, and your district doesn't know about it, that's actually on you as a human being. Now, if you get an email saying from your department, yes, use the online PDF you found, that's what we'll use, we'll no longer buy copies of the text of this novel, then the onus actually falls on the district.
Interesting. Because I know there was a big court case a while back, I think it was in Texas maybe, where there was a textbook that was circulated in PDF form.
Yeah, it wasn't a textbook. It was actually a test prep series.
Interesting.
And when they made the copies of it, they actually left off the bottom of the page that said, do not copy without permission.
Emily, I feel like we're in like, we've veered into true crime podcasts right now.
Seriously. But there's other things too, like music teachers will make copies of music, sheet music that they get.
Right.
Without permission. That's actually copyright infringement. And I have a music teacher friend who's like, yeah, when I'm like one or two short, I'll reach out to the company and say, hey, may I, and get the email back that says yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I can tell you that I still probably own the photocopies of the music I played way back in the fourth and fifth grade. You know, because we didn't give it back. It was just photocopies. But again, people own that. People own the rights to that. That's their living.
People are making money from that. Exactly. And so if you sort of having that copy is keeping other copies from being bought, right, that isn't fair sort of in the long run.
Right. And I understand, I've had people have the comment, well, but they have enough money. Really, it's their living. What musicians, it's what artists, it's what writers, it's what photographers, it's what videographers do. This is how they make their money. And many of them are starving artists. So, you know, let's not take that from them.
Completely agree. Completely agree.
It's the whole, like, it reminds me of the whole, like, influencer, like, but you'll get exposure.
But they'll give you permission if you ask.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like most people are willing to help teachers, too. You're like, hey, I'm a teacher. I just need one more copy.
Yeah.
I definitely remember having to give my copied music back, though. I don't remember. I feel like we had to. I don't remember.
I don't know. I found a lot of it. I don't. Maybe I was supposed to give it back and I didn't. That's totally.
At a certain point, that could be an executive function as well, right? I left it in my backpack.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to go back all that time, it's probable that I was supposed to go back. You know, but I was 12, so what do you want from me?
Yeah.
But again, it's things to talk about. I even did it with my daughter the other day. She doodles a lot, and she's like, hey, everybody wants copies of this. They want to make this keychain. And I was like, did you design that duck yourself? And she was like, well, no, I traced it. And I was like, well, then you can't sell it. And she's a little cranky with me. She's like, mom, why do you have to? I was like, no, I'm just telling you that that's the right, morally right thing to do. That's not yours. Draw one yourself.
Well, and it only takes one issue. I mean, one thing that I have occasionally heard from educators is, I've been doing this for years, right? Mm-hmm. I've been doing it this way for years, or showing this video for years, or listening to this song for years. But sort of to go back to the point that we made at the beginning of the episode, all it takes is, you know, one parent that was listening in the cyber, you know, classroom who has connections to someone, or something that's posted on social media getting seen in the wrong light. It really only takes that one exposure. So you at a certain point want to protect yourself as much as possible, right? It's not to be a grumpy gills. It truly is about protecting you and your classroom and you know, your ability to have your own profession.
Yeah. And we really shouldn't use the excuse, but I've always done this, because that's about learning, right?
Yes.
Just because it was okay yesterday doesn't mean that it's okay today. You know, and that's the world evolving and things changing. I remember when social media first came out, teachers were told, don't give kids your cell phone numbers. Don't put things on social media. Don't be anywhere there. And now schools are telling you to make Twitter accounts and telling you to put things out there. And we're asking parents permission to take photos of their kids and put them online. So, you know, those things have changed, and we have to honor the fact that things change.
I think that's really, really quality advice.
Speaking of quality advice, I know you are full of quality advice. So we always end with this sort of question of, what piece of advice would you give to new educators? Because we know we have a ton of them who listen, or even existing educators who are looking for sage advice, starting out on their journey, whether it's with copyright, whether it's in general, however way you want to take this question.
Sure. I really think, just in general, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to reach out and say, I'm not sure, because there are so many people out there that know so many things, and educators are the people who will give you all the things all the time. So just ask. And when it comes to copyright, that's the biggest thing, is to really just say, hey, you know, is this okay or not? Like, if I look at something, I'm like, if I'm like, I'm not sure, I always err towards probably should ask permission or not use it, just to be in the right. So we really just want to keep asking. Know that you don't know things and don't be afraid to go find things out.
I think that that is an absolutely perfect sentiment to end this episode on, because you're right. I think it goes both to being a teacher, being in the classroom, being a sort of lifelong learner, and also to having respect for many of these, you know, people's materials that are being created, right? I have been surprised since, you know, we have been doing more reaching out to different artists and different people, how readily willing and excited people are to give you access to the things that they love and that they worked so hard on. For the most part, they want those things to be involved in classrooms and involved in education, and they're happy to work something out with you. Every once in a while, you do get a grumpy gills, right? But for the most part, you know, they want this to be a win-win situation. So you guys, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Cyber Sisters podcast. If you would like more from Melissa, you can find her on Twitter at Mel Ann Pero. We will have this included in the show notes if you're looking for how to spell that, or at her website, melissaannpero.com. It's a great website. You can find lots of great resources, and those headshots are beautiful. Our next episode will be up on November 12th, where we will be finally doing an entire episode dedicated to Nearpod. You guys asked for it. We are delivering. And in the meantime, keep in touch with us on our socials. We're on Twitter at Allison K Teaches and at Settler Cyber. We always appreciate keeping the conversation going. So please like, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and keep trying hard.